Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from the Land of Israel on the Land of Israel Network. Shalom and welcome. I am today in my offices here in the offices of the Jewish community of Hebron, and I'll explain to you in a second why we're here 2 weeks in a row. Very important week to be in Hebron. Shalom and welcome to the Land of Israel Network. And thank you for all the great emails that I've gotten this week. I've gotten more emails this week about Christmas and about the issue that we talked about last week's show than in many a weeks. It hit a nerve. And what's funny is that there were a lot of emails of Christians who said to me, "Yishai, this might surprise you, but we stand with you." That's right. No Christmas in Israel. That's right. Absolutely. We're going to be talking about that. But before we go on to any other issues, we have to hit this incredible Torah portion. And this week, Rabbi Mike Foyer and so many of my good friends are actually in the UK. Eve Harrow, she's in the UK. Mike Foyer's in the UK. Arya King is in the UK. Ashley Perry, and even a good friend of mine named Yahya Muhammad, who is a great pro-Israel Arab. They're all at Limud UK, but Rabbi Mike is not with me, and I needed a partner this week. Although I got a lot of messages from you guys saying hashtags that Yishai alone is not bad at all. So I really appreciate that. That's really great. But this week is a very special Torah portion. And here in Hebron, we like to think of it as Chayei Sarah 2, right? You guys all remember about 2 months ago, we had the Torah portion of Chayei Sarah, in which the beginnings of that Torah portion was the famous purchase of the field in the cave here in Hebron, which was going to become first the burial of Sarah, and then subsequently the burial of the whole biblical family other than Rachel. And you remember that Shabbat, 35,000 people came here to Hebron, and we hosted them, and here in the next door city, our sister city of Kiryat Arba. So you recall that. And this week is the number two, the completion of that story. And that is because our father Abraham purchased Marat HaMachpelah, but now it's the turn of our father Jacob, Yaakov. And he is going to be dying in Egypt. And as he's dying in Egypt, he's going to be calling on to his beloved son Yosef in order to make him take an oath to bring him back to be buried here in Hebron in Marat HaMachpelah. Now we're going to be talking about this whole issue and the biblical text itself, the text of the Torah, with Noam Arnon, none other than the world expert on Marat HaMachpelah and the legendary spokesman here of the Jewish community of Hebron. Noam, pick up your mic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Shalom, shalom, and welcome everybody. Welcome, Yishai. I am so happy to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for letting me into your office, which is a lot of fun. It's a real professor-like office here. And I find that this Torah portion of Vayechi that talks about Jacob, his request, and then and subsequently his burial in Hebron, to be very, very, as we say in Hebrew, meragesh, very emotional, very moving. And that is because here's a man who's dying. Abraham was dying here. His wife died here in Kiryat Arba. Okay, so you could say she died here. He wanted to bury her. He didn't want to carry her around. This is where she lived. This is where she died. Okay. But here we have a situation where Yaakov is dying. He's laying there dying in Egypt. And he makes this request, "Please don't bury me here in Egypt." A lot of times when I give speeches, I say to people that what he said is, "Don't bury me in Hackensack. Don't bury me in Los Angeles. Bury me in the Land of Israel." Also, this has personal value to me because my father, Alav Shalom, died in America, and we flew him over and buried him in the Land of Israel. So I really understand that on a kind of on a personal level, what it means to take a body from Chutz La'aretz, from outside of the Land of Israel, and bury him here. And that's why I think this Torah portion is so moving, that he could have been buried there. And in fact, Joseph, we're going to learn at the end, is buried in Egypt. Yes, he asks to be taken out of the lands of Egypt, but you know, he decided to stay kind of with the people. Here, Jacob's request is, "Don't keep me down here. I want you to take me physically." Tell me a little bit about that. Why do you think that it was so important for Yaakov to not be buried in Egypt, to be buried here?
Well, so many, many great things to say. First of all, let's think about that. The two portions of the Torah, Chayei Sarah and Vayechi, who deal with Me'arat HaMachpelah, place of so-called dead people. Both the names include Chaim, Chayei Sara, and Vayechi. The two portions that deal with tombs, graves, and bury include the name of Chaim. Mm-hmm. Is what you said, that the fathers and the mothers are waiting for you to visit them, it's according to the Kabbalah, to the Zohar, which says, they are not dead, they are alive. In different level of life, but they are alive. And this is what the Torah, the hint is the names of the portions, Chaye Sarah and Vayechi. Mm-hmm. Both names include life in them.
That's right, Chai. Right, everybody knows the word Chai. Remember, you see those necklaces, Chai.
Yes,
Niot Chai. That's one of Israel's most famous songs.
You know, I think that the Avot and Imahot are more alive than many other people that's supposedly alive, but their lives has no meaning, and the existence of the Avot and Imahot has so much meaning for mankind. So their life is continuing even today.
And certainly through their children, who are very much alive, and Am Yisrael Chai.
That's right.
And also back. We're alive and we're back.
And this is what Yosef said. Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avi Chai. Ha'od Avi Chai. Avi Chai. Our father is alive.
Right. I am Joseph. Is my father yet alive? So let's dig in actually to the actual text. I want to do the text with you here today.
Well,
so I'm gonna read the text and we're gonna translate it. If you don't like my translation, jump in. And the Torah portion starts, as you said, Vayichi Yaakov, Jacob lived, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt, 17 Shana. He lived there 17 years. And our rabbis tell us those were good years for him. Finally, he got a little
menucha.
A little menucha in regular life. Vayihi Yemei Yaakov, Shnei Chayav, 7 Shanim,
Ve'arbaim,
U'me'at Shana, right? So the life of, it was the days of Jacob, were 7 years and 40 years and 100 years, 147 years old. Reminds us a little bit about how Sarah, in Parshat Chayei Sarah, how old she was, 7 and 20 and 100 years old, 127 years old. There's a parallelism there, right? It's a parallel. V'ikrevu yemei Yisrael lamut. It was time for Israel to die. And look how the Torah switches between Jacob the man, who lived a certain amount of years, but now his more national standing, the father of the Jewish people of Israel, it's his time to pass away. V'ikra. By the way, it never says that he actually dies. Famously, our rabbis say Jacob never died. It says his days were coming that Israel was about to die, but it never says he actually dies. Vayikra livno leYosef, he calls his son Joseph. Vayomer lo, he says to him, Im na matzati chen beinecha, if I have found favor in your eyes, simna yadcha tachat yirchi, put your hand. If I have found favor in your eyes, now do me a favor. Put your hand under my thigh. And this is, as we've learned with Abraham and his servant, is a form of taking an oath, right? Now, there's some, by the way,
It's a swear.
It's an oath, a swear. But some people have explained that he doesn't put his hand under the thigh, but actually holds on to his Brit Milah. Is that true? Do you believe in that or what? I heard that from there are explanations. Like, I want to hear your thought on
that. I know those explanations. I think it goes somehow too far.
Right. You think it is what it says. You put it under the thigh. You're sitting down.
It means when you put your arm here, when you put your arm under the leg, I mean you put yourself somehow under the authority of the one who you swear to.
Right.
And this is how you're obligated to fulfill his will.
Right. I can imagine it. You're sitting down and you put your hand under the thigh here.
Means I am under you. You
right.
Tell me what to do, I'll do it.
Right. But there's only one other place in the whole Torah that this is discussed, and that is right after Marat HaMachpelah was purchased. That's when Abraham is going to make his servant take an oath.
When he sent his servant Eliezer to find a woman, a wife for Yitzhak. Again, two portions with two typical items in the Torah.
So, sim na yadcha tachat yirchi, put your hand under my thigh or take an oath. Ve'asita imadi chesed ve'emet, and do for me kindness and truth. Now, we know that the word chesed ve'emet immediately gives us a signal that this is about death.
There's That's some right. Chesed shel emet.
Which means what?
It's mean the last thing you can do for somebody who cannot give you something back. This is a true chesed that you do when you go and you to Levaya. It's something that really you make a chesed for the man. Now he can't give you anything back.
Right. So we have the concept of chesed shelemet, like the truest kind of kindness that you could do for the dead. In any case, he signals to him, I'm talking about something that I need you to swear to me because I'm about to die. Al na tikbereni b'mitzrayim. Do not, please, bury me in Egypt. That in itself is a phrase, right? Forget about what else I want. I want you to, don't bury me here.
Yes. Now, let's understand why. We know that in Egypt, there are a lot of marvelous graves, pyramids. The Egyptians knew how to bury people with the most honorable way. Yaakov doesn't want it because he knows. Once he's buried in Egypt, it says that the homeland of the Jewish people had moved to Egypt. And he wants to symbolize that Egypt is not our land. It's not our place. We have a land. We have a homeland. And this is my place. So please take me back home. This is what he said in the last will. Take me home.
You see, I just want to pause you for a second. To me, there's something more miragesh, more moving, even about this poor Torah portion, because Sarah, we don't hear her saying, bury me in Marat HaMachpelah. But here Yaakov saying, like, don't bury me in Egypt. Maybe this is coming from my experiences as an immigrant, a returning immigrant to this land, which is like Yaakov is saying, like, yeah, you know, I'm from Israel, and I moved to America for a while, but please don't bury me here. And I know that when my father passed away, it was obvious to us, don't bury him in New York. Bury him in the land of Israel.
Because this is not my place. This is not my homeland. And we have a homeland. I want to be back with my fathers.
And exactly that. V'shachavti im avotai. I will lay, meaning to say, don't bury me in Egypt. Instead, v'shachavti im avotai, I will lay with my forefathers. Unesa'atani. And you shall carry me. Mi Mitzrayim. I'm telling you now exactly what I mean by that. What I mean is technically carry my dead body from Egypt. Ukvartani bekvuratam. Bury me in their burial place. Joseph answers back without it saying the word. Joseph says, Vayomar, and he answered him, Anochi e'ese kedvarecha. I shall do what you said.
So this is what Yaakov said to Yosef. But Yaakov didn't want to say it only to him. Although Yosef he had the power to do it, but Yaakov wanted all the sons to participate in this deed. This is why after he said to Yosef, and he could rely on the promise of Yosef alone.
Rely.
To rely on a promise, but he did not. He thought it's not enough. He should deliver this will to all the sons. And this is what he's doing in the next chapter,
right.
in 49.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. but the man who's in charge, who has the power to send him out. And by the way, it turns out that in that Egyptian period, emigration and immigration were tightly controlled by the government. And therefore, exiting to bury somebody else is not an easy thing. And Joseph had the power to request it of Pharaoh. But he says to Jacob, sure, I'll do what you said. However, Jacob is not satisfied. And now we remember how Jacob made Esau take an oath and say to, when he sold the birthright, he says, swear to me. He double seals it, double locks it. And he says to Joseph, Vayomer hishav'a li. He says, you got to swear to me. It's not enough that you said, okay, I'll do it, Dad. Well, not enough. And he says, let me just finish. V'yishavalo. Indeed, he takes an oath to him. V'yishtachu Yisrael al rosh hamita. And Israel bowed down at the head of the bed. Meaning to say, he was in bed, he lay down, and yet he bows down to Joseph after he takes that oath, promising taking a solemn oath to bury Jacob in the land of Israel. Why so much weight? Why so much? Why this double lock? Why this double seal? A lot of the commentators ask, why does he need to make him take an oath about that?
I think that Yaakov had so many times in his life that he was somehow cheated, and by Laban, whatever. He wanted to be sure. He wanted to close his eyes, very, very sure, and, you know, relax that this oath is going to be fulfilled. And he wanted to make sure that he gets the best way to ensure and to implement his deed.
Some people also say that Pharaoh may have said to Joseph, could have said to Joseph, no, I don't agree. And then he would have to say to him, look, my father made me swear to him. This is like, I can't not do this.
Yes.
So he needed that extra weight. But in any case, one thing is for sure. Egypt is a tremendous gravitational pull. There's a tremendous weight of Egypt culturally and the center of Jewish life. And maybe somebody could have kind of worked around it. You know, he said move him, but maybe it means, you know, maybe let's call the cemetery the Hebron Cemetery or something like that. You know, so, no. You got to take an oath to me that you're taking me out of here. And
we have to remember, in the Egyptian culture, there is a very, very wide field of burial and the journey of the soul to the other world. You know that the soul in Egyptian culture is going through very, very, you know, many, many chapters of going down into the underground, the hell and the underground world. And Yaakov wanted to make sure that he is not in this way, he's not in the journey. He has his own way.
You know, Noam, it's very interesting. You're one of the world's leading experts on Maarat HaMachpelah, the Tomb of the Patriarchs, and the building, the Herodian building on top of that. What you're kind of saying here, and I never thought of this before, there's a comparison here between the Egyptian pyramids and Maarat HaMachpelah. There's like two different burial systems, two different spiritual systems. And you're saying, like, I'm not part of your, you know, eternal life through mummification and through all these things. And we do see, by the way, that he does get mummified. Egypt wanted to take him in that pathway, right?
Well, physically, this is the only way to implement his will. Mm-hmm. But spiritually, I would say, spiritually, the Egyptian death is downward and the Jewish death is upward.
Fabulous. That is a fabulous distinction. I thank you for that. And from there, basically what's going to happen is that was chapter 47. From chapter 47, there's going to be two more things that happen, and that is the blessing of the two boys, Ephraim and Menashe, right? And that whole issue, which I'm not going to touch right now. And then also there's going to be the blessings that he's going to give the various tribes, and their different kind of designations and names, and the special blessings that Jacob gives to his children, very reminiscent, certainly, of the end of the five books of Moses, the blessings that Moses gives. There's a lot of literature written on the comparison between the two sets of blessings. But in chapter 49, towards the end of it, one second, I just want to make sure I'm not making any mistakes here. Chapter 49, there it is. It says like this, right, in verse 30, he says like this. After he's giving them blessings, he says, Vaitzavotam, and he commanded his children, saying, Vayomer, saying, Vayomer Elehim, Vaitzavotam, Vayomer Elehim. He commanded them, and he said to them, Ani, me, Jacob, Ani ne'esaf el ami, I am now being gathered onto my nation. Kivru oti el avotai, bury me to my forefathers, El ha-me'ara asher b'zdeh Efron achiti, to the cave which is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. Well, we haven't heard that name in a long time, right?
Well, in Chaya Sara, of course.
Right, we learned the name. So why does he identify, please, Noam, please tell me, why does he identify the Maarat HaMachpelah, which was purchased fair and square, and the Torah taught us this, why does he refer to it as the field of Ephron the Hittite? Why is that still a designation that's important for him to mention at this point?
Well, many, many years has passed from the time that Abraham had purchased the cave and the field. Now all his descendants are not here. They are not in the land of Canaan. Maybe the Canaanites or the Hittites or whatever would claim, well, what do you want here? I mean, when they see the Israelites come with the body of Yaakov, who maybe some Canaanites or someone would say, well, what are you looking for? It's like someone will say today to the Jews who return to the land of Israel, who are you and what are you doing here? Now, if you forget the whole operation of the purchase of the place, you don't know what to answer. So this is what Yaakov said to his sons. I know there was somebody named Ephron many, many years away. I'm sure that Abraham had told it to Yaakov. By the way, do you know that Abraham was there in the bar mitzvah of Yaakov? Did you know that?
No.
So he did. Because Abraham was there until the age of 175. And he was there. Yaakov was born when Yitzchak was 60. Nachon? So Abraham was there in the bar mitzvah of Yaakov. So Abraham could deliver them. He could give away the whole history and the information and the message of buying, of purchasing. Yaakov, when he said it to his sons, he had heard it from the origin person who did it. This is why he said, I know there was somebody named Ephron, right, many, many years away.
Right.
And he sold it to my grandfather, and this is yours. Your right. land now.
And
you should know the history.
Right, know the history, exactly. That's exactly it. Know the history. Good. By the way, there is a word for that in English, an interesting word, about art and where the art comes from. It's called provenance. It's a word that I learned just a few years ago. Provenance. A piece of art has its provenance, its history, how it came to be. So he's saying to them, it might not be the Steve Front anymore, but understand the history. This is how it came to be.
Yes.
And he keeps going. Now remember, he's on his deathbed. And he says, Ba-me'ara, this is now verse 30, Ba-me'ara, at the cave, Asher b'zdeh ha-machpelah, which is in the field of Machpelah, Asher al-pnei Mamre, which is on the face of Mamre, Be'eretz Kanan.
From the east side, by the way, al-pnei, eastward.
East
and
of Mamre.
We know where Mamre is, supposedly. Today it's called in Arabic Nimra, very close names. And the Me'ara, the cave, is eastward, al-pnei Mamre.
Okay, east from Mamre, good. Yes. Where? Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. Asher kana Avraham, which Abraham purchased. Et asadeh, the field, me'et Ephron Chiti, from Ephron the Hittite, la'achuzat kever, for a burial plot. Here's the place. Here's the man. Here's the history, the provenance. This is the whole, I'm telling you the whole story. And it keeps going. And here we're going to get a piece of information that we didn't know before. Shama kavru et Avraham ve'et Sarah. There were buried Abraham and Sarah. Ve'et Sarah ishto, and Sarah his wife. Shama kavru et Yitzchak ve'et Rivka. There were buried Yitzchak and Rivka ishto. We didn't know where Rivka was buried. The Torah did not tell us this earlier. Okay. I don't think it told us actually where Yitzchak was buried either. It said Yitzchak was buried. But it says, now it tells us for sure, that is where Yitzchak and Berid were buried. Veshama kavarti et Leah. Also a piece of information that we didn't know before. There is where I buried Leah. I find that this phrase, this sentence, to be truly very meragesh, very moving. He says, listen, this is where Abraham and Sarah buried. This is where Yitzchak and Rivka buried. This is where I buried Leah. And that's where I want to be buried.
And he didn't say, this is where my grandpa and grandma are buried. And he doesn't say this, the place of my father and mother. He's called them their
by
names.
Why is that?
Why? Because through history, He wanted the sons, the children, and the children of Israel forever remember the names of the people who are buried there. So people should remember. It's not grandpa and grandma for history. These are the names right. of our forefathers and mothers.
And then again he says, now a third time, Mikneh ha-sadeh ha-me'ara, what's the purchase of the field and the cave, asher, and the cave which is in it, ha-me'ara asher bo, me'et b'nechet, from the Hittites. It's like three different Hittite mentions here.
It's the same Hittite, but he said the name Ephron.
Right.
And he said it's not only Ephron himself alone, because all the people knew about the purchase and confirmed it and made sure that it's our property. And he reminds them it's the field and the cave. And the cave was purchased for a burial place that no one can say, I don't want a cemetery in front of my window, because you know this is the place of the burial of our forefathers and mothers. This is what it was purchased for. So no one can claim anything else. And this is
it. It was zoned for burial.
Yes. It's a burial place. And Jacob reminds it to his sons, you should know all the facts about that. You should be sure. You should be, you know, today when you see so many Israelis that don't know the history and are not sure for the place, for their place in the land, and so many others come from all over the world and say, you are occupiers, you are foreign, foreign people here. We should know the history. This is what Yaakov said. Please learn the history and know it and use it.
By the way, before we get... you know, let me read one more sentence from this chapter. Ve'yichal Yaakov letzavot et banav. Yaakov finished commanding his sons. Ve'esof raglav el hamita. He gathered his feet. And here we learned before, ne'esaf, anin, it starts with anin ne'esaf elami, I'm gathered to my nation. Now he gathers his feet onto the bed. Ve'yikva. He expired. It doesn't say he died. He kind of, maybe his body expired. V'yasef el amav. He was gathered onto his people. What is this gathered onto the people business? This is a recurring theme in the Bible. I have learned that one of the reasons that it says that he's gathered onto his people is because people used to be buried with their family.
And more than that, when you are alive, everyone is a different body. When you take this pizza, I can't take this pizza. Everybody is... Let's say he's fighting for his own...
slice of the pizza. Slice of the pie.
But when somebody passed away, he's not a different body anymore. He belongs to the people. He belongs to the nation. He belongs to the Klal Israel. He goes back to his crater, to his makor.
His source.
Source of being part of the unity of the nationhood of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the unity of the nationhood of the Jewish people, there's also the unity of the land. And before we go to the last segment about Maarat HaMachpelah, there's going to be two more places that are going to be mentioned specifically as purchased or begotten in one way or another. One of them is the tomb of Joseph in Shechem. He says to him, "Vani natati lecha Shechem echad al achecha," and there's different. It means I have given you either an extra portion on top of your brothers, or I have given you this special place Shechem for you, Yosef, and for the tribe of Ephraim. That's where you're going to be buried. Asher lekachti miyada emori becharbi uvekashti, which I took from the Amorite with my sword and my bow. So that's one thing, is the tomb of Joseph. And the other place is the tomb of Rachel. He's going to give him in this monologue, when he talks to Joseph, he's going to say, and I buried Rachel on the way in Beit Lechem, on the way to Ephrat. On the way to Ephrata, and then it says on the way to Ephrat. It says it two times, just like it says it originally when she passed away. It mentioned two times that she's buried in Bethlehem. So it gives us a kind of map into important places in the land of Israel. The other places are Shechem, the tomb of Rachel. And these two have a weight, you know, and there's some sisterhood between the tomb of Joseph and Hebron, as we learned that Joseph was sent from the depth of Hebron, from the valley of Hebron, to Shechem, right? And of course, the tomb of Rachel is not so far away from here. These are connected sites to our, what do you have to say about those two sites vis-a-vis Marat Machpelah or ownership?
First of all, it's true that those places were purchased and are symbols, national symbols, national monuments of the Israeli people, of the Jewish people, from the very beginning of history. And let's look at the map, and you can see from Shechem to Yerushalayim, to Kever Rachel, to Hebron, it's one line on the hills of Judea and Samaria. The original location, the original geographical zone of where Jewish history begins is on top of the hills. It's not in the valley, coastal plain of Tel Aviv and Netanya. We all love Tel Aviv and Netanya and Herzliya and Ranana and Ashdod and Kfar Saba. But the original location of the Jewish soul, the Jewish spirit, is above on the hills. To breathe the wind, the free air of the wind above the hills, it's different. It makes a different soul of a people.
As Prime Minister Netanyahu says, Jews are from Judea.
That's right.
Jews are from Judea. I like that very much.
That's right.
Famous
That's
Netanyahu right. quote. You know, he says the Chinese are from China, French people are from France, Jews are from Judea.
That's right.
One last thing before we go to the very last segment about Marat HaMachpelah. One more phrase, which has become a very famous song here in the land of Israel, which is chapter 48, verse 16. It says, when he's blessing, and the verse before, Jacob, it says, Vayvarech et Yosef. He blessed Joseph. Vayomer, and he said, Ha Elohim, asher yitalchu avotai lefanav, the God that my fathers walked in front of, Avraham veYitzchak, Ha Elohim, haroe oti meodi ad hayom hazeh, the God who has shepherded me from when I was, from my inception to this very day. And here is the song. Hamalach hagoel oti mikol ra, the angel who has redeemed me from all bad things, yivarech et ha-ne'arim, will bless the youths, your two sons, v'ikare bahem shemi, and he'll call, and they will be called on my name, v'shem of, my name is Jacob, v'shem avotai, and the names of my fathers, Avraham v'Yitzchak, Abraham and Isaac, v'yidgu larov, they'll become like fish, they'll multiply like fish, bekerev haaretz, in within the land. He's putting the name of the fathers and mother, and the fathers in this case, onto the children. He's blessing them with the name of the fathers, the name of the fathers.
And the name of, he means the name Israel.
Right.
Shmi, Bikarebam Shmi, it's the name Israel. Can you see how marvelous it is? It's really, really great that when the Jewish people had at last decided to return to the land, it's called the land of Israel, Eretz Israel, and to establish a state, it's called Medinat Israel. We took the name of Israel, of our father Israel, and we renewed the name in our new statehood, in our new nationhood. We again return to the original name of Israel, which means Kisarita Im Elohim Im Anashim Vatuchal. This is what the Torah said.
Which means you fought or you struggled with man and gods, with gods and man, and you could. You were able to.
So we carry the name of victory. Israel is the name of victory. I heard from...
That's a beautiful thought. You know, I never put those words together, but it's a very beautiful thought, Noam. That Israel means victory.
I heard from my friend Avshalom Kor, Dr. Avshalom Kor, he said that...
The famous Hebrew linguist.
If Hashem wanted us to be a nation of peace, he would call us Shlumiel.
And that, what people don't know is that that's a kind of word, that's a funny word meaning a kind of Shlumiel is like a person who's not coordinated, right? It's a person who like falls and trips. Right. What's it called? A klutz.
Yes.
A klutz, okay.
But they didn't call us Shlumiel, right. They called us Israel.
Israel, very good. Okay, Noam, we got two more things. Let us now finish off the story of Marat Machpelah, which ends basically the story of the book of Genesis. The whole book of Genesis, the whole thing is wrapped up. If you had to wrap it up in a place, it's wrapped up in stories, it's wrapped up in names of people. But if you had to wrap it up in a place, it all gets wrapped up at Marat Machpelah. And it says in chapter 50, verse 12, V'yasu banav lo, his sons did to him, kasher tzivam, as he commanded them. How? Colon. V'yisu oto vanav arza, arza knan. His sons carried him to the land of Canaan. V'yikberu oto, and they buried him. B'me'arat zdeha Machpelah, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which is parenthetically what? Asher kana Avraham, which Abraham purchased at the sadeh, the field, la'achuzat kaver, for a burial place, me'et Ephron Achiti, from Ephron the Hittite, al p'nei Mamre, to the east of Mamre. Man, this Ephron, he got a good deal. I mean, you know, he may have sold the Marat Machpelah, but he got into the Torah a lot, right? He became a star.
You know, in Israel today, so many places are called in Arabic names.
Right.
You can go to Castina, you can go to whatever, all those ancient Arab names, Masmia, Babel Wad, many Arabic names, Wadi Ara, Wadi Milech. Many Arab names are still around because people remember. When the Arabs were here, they penetrated into our country, into our land, in the 7th century. And many places when they bury the Arabic names. And the Torah does not ignore the fact that the Me'arah, the field and the cave, belong to Ephron. Actually, the Torah said and teaches us the fact they really were belonging to Hebron. But we purchased it, we bought it. So again, now these verses, as Yaakov said it to his sons, in this chapter, it's the Torah said it to us. When we learn the Torah, when we read the Parsha, we should remember, okay, somebody was here, but we have all the rights, it's ours. We don't forget what happened in the past. But this is our land.
Now, Jacob's trials and tribulations in this world are seemingly over in terms of his being buried in Marat Machpelah like he wished. But the Midrash and even the Talmud itself adds that it's not the end of the story. As the burial procession, and by the way, the Talmud will explain to us how the brothers stood, how they carried the coffin, just like they walked with the tabernacle in the desert. They stood in a certain arrangement. They carried the coffin to Marat Machpelah, and we're just about to have this beautiful burial. Here we go. Noam, here we're about to come to Marat Machpelah. What a moment. Suddenly, who's standing in front there? Says the Medrash. There it is. It's once again yet another face-off with Esav. And Esav, or Esau, is standing in front of Marat Machpelah, and he says, "Fee, fi, fo, fum. I'm not going to let you bury that bum. No way is he going to be buried here. This is my place. I am the firstborn. I have every right to be buried here." And then the Jews become very Jewy. They go into a very classic, you know, kind of Jewish, Talmudic, legal discussion. They say, "Wait a minute. Yaakov purchased it from you." And he says, "Oh, yeah? Show me the proof." They say, "Well, you signed the contract." He says, "Show me the proof." They're like, "Well, we don't have it with us. It's back in Egypt." He's like, "Produce the document." And they send down, who is it?
Naphtali.
Naphtali, fleet-footed Naphtali. He's our Mercury, Lahavdil Elf of the Elod. He's flying down. He's going real fast with his fleet-footedness down to Egypt to get the document. And they're having an international law discussion. Do you have proof? Did you make the purchase? And then there is one guy there. Now, he's the son of Dan. and his name is Chushim. Now, Chushim means senses. He's Mr. Senses. Weirdly, though, he's deaf. His name is Senses, that he has good, healthy senses, but he's got a bad sense, which is a sense of hearing. And he says to his brothers, what, you know, remember, this is before all these new implants and these, you know, today we almost don't, thank God, we almost have no deaf people, but, you know, I remember when I was a kid still seeing people who are deaf, and he would say, who, what's going on here? And they said to him, this guy Esav, Uncle Esav, is blocking the burial of Yaakov. And he, being a person of good senses, now there's two different versions here, but the Gemara says that he takes out a club and he bops him on the head. He bops him on the head, and the Gemara says his eyes popped out. Esav's eyes popped out. And Yaakov, who's a body, who's a mummified body, opens his eyes and smiles, says the Gemara. And the Gemara mentions the famous verse,
Yismach tzadik
ki chazanakam, right?
Ki chazanakam v'amar bichatz b'dam ha'rasha.
Right, that a righteous man will be happy because he foresaw, he saw, in his life, he saw retribution, he saw payback. And Esav blocks the burial, but then he gets bopped on the head. Another version is that his head gets cut off and get rolled into Ma'arat Mechpelah, and that's where it's buried. Once I told that story to Knesset members here, when they came to Hebron, I said to them, you see, sometimes to have good senses is to be deaf. All those claims that we're not from here, all those claims that we're not supposed to be here, that we're occupiers, sometimes the healthiest way to be is to just not even listen to that stuff, not to produce documents, not to argue with them, but just to kind of be deaf to all those claims. In any case, indeed, the sons do bury Yaakov here in this place and seal Ma'arat HaMachpelah as this place of what? Pilgrimage, prayer, eternal connectivity.
Everything you say about Ma'arat HaMachpelah is true. It's also a place, as in Hellenistic or Roman architecture, called mausoleum. You have different kinds of mausoleum. And from one aspect, this is a sort of Hellenistic or Roman mausoleum. Because the building was built then 2,000 years ago in the Roman period. So they built in the same design and architecture of buildings, of impressive buildings in the Roman Empire. This is from one side. But not as a typical Hellenistic Roman mausoleums. This place, this building, has another floor, another space, and this place invites the people to come in and pray and come in and get inspiration from the personalities and from the faith of the fathers and the mothers. So it's from one aspect, it's the building is a typical Hellenistic building, but from the other side, it's very Jewish building. It was built by Jews when Christianity and Islam did not exist in the time that it was built. And it is a Jewish building symbolizing the eternal memory of the fathers and the mother, an eternal message and faith and ideas they taught. And this is what people come here to get inspiration, to pray, and to get some sort of lehitchaber, to get united with the kedusha, with the holiness of our fathers and mothers.
All right, and so another interesting distinction you made before, we talked about Egypt, the pyramids, and Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Now you talk about the Roman mausoleums and Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Let's just finish up this Torah portion by saying that Joseph is going to almost mimic word for word, commanding his brothers and his children, saying, take me out of here, but not now. When you'll be called and the secret password will be given, which is Pakod Yifkod. If you hear that secret password for anybody, that means that it's the redemption is here. And at that time, I want you to take my bones out from this place. And he made them swear. He made them swear. And by the way, he says, take me out of the bones from this place to the land which was sworn to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, v'shava Yosef et bnei Yisrael. And then Joseph made them swear that when the children of Israel, when you hear the words, pakod yifkod, when you hear those words, God will take you out of here, and don't forget my bones. Don't forget to take my bones out of here. All right, Noam Arnon is the world's expert in Marat HaMachpelah, spokesman, legendary spokesman of Hebron. We have one last thing, Noam, okay? One last thing. Just the other day here, the Minister of Culture and Sport, Miri Regev, came to get acclamation, get respect and a kind of a award for helping grow the Jewish community of Hebron, including a new wing of the museum that's going to talk about the founders of Jewish Hebron. And you were the MC of the event. And her name is Minister, of course, Miri Regev. Amazing lady, right? Amazing lady. Just a powerhouse lady in so many ways. Very feminine, very strong. Knows what she's talking about. Great stuff. But that word, her last name, Regev, what does the word Regev mean? What does that word mean?
It's a piece of...
It's like a chunk of soil.
Soil, ground.
Right, a piece of earth, a piece of earth.
Yes.
A piece of earth. And you've taught us today, we've learned that Marat HaMachpelah was purchased. You started off, you were the MC of that event, you started off that event with a song. You got on stage and you said, I want to start this event with a song. And you sang a song that had the word Regev in it. Will you sing that song to us and then we'll explain it a little bit? Go ahead. Don't be embarrassed. Here it is. Come on.
Huh? Let's do it together.
No. My voice is not like your voice.
Saper lach hayalda v'gam lecha hayeled Ech be'eretz Yisrael adama nig'elet Ech be'eretz Yisrael adama nig'elet Dunam po v'dunam sham Regev achar regev Kach nifde admat ha'am מצפון עד נגב, דונם פה ודונם שם, רגב אחר רגב, כך נפדה אדמת העם, מצפון עד נגב.
Fabulous. Now, what does that song mean? אספר לך ילדה וגם לך ילד. I'll tell you, a little girl and little boy, איך בארץ ישראל אדמה ניגלת, how in the land of Israel, earth is redeemed. Dunam po v'dunam sham. A little bit. A dunam is like a, what is it, like a hectare? How does that translate it? It's an amount of land. Dunam po v'dunam sham. Here a parcel of land, there a parcel of land. Regev achar regev. A chunk of soil after chunk of soil. Kach nivdeh admat ha'am mitzafon ad negev. That is how we will purchase back the land of the nation from the north to the south. And this is one of the songs. Where did you know the song from?
Wow. This song includes some words about the box, the tzedakah box.
Go ahead.
Al hakir tluya kufsa, zot kufsat hatchelet, kol pruta shenichnesa, adama nig'elet, kol pruta shenichnesa, adama nig'elet. It means on the wall there is a box. Tchelet,
the light blue. The
blue. Every penny that goes in redeems the land. Every penny, every cent that you put in helps to redeem, to purchase our land. When I was a child, we had this box on the wall.
This is the JNF box. This is the Keren HaKayemet.
Kufsat HaKeren HaKayemet. In my
kindergarten,
we had this on the wall. Every Friday, we should bring a small coin, pruta, whatever it was then, and we put it, and we were singing this song. Now, when Mrs. Regev,
Minister Regev,
announced she's going to come, I remember that song. Let's say 60 years ago. Okay, I remember the Regev Achar Regev. A piece of land after a piece of land. This is how we're going to redeem our land. And I thought it's very, very nice to sing a song mentioning her name in this connection of redeeming the land. And this is what we do here.
And this is how Abraham started the story here.
Regev achar regev. That's right. Piece of land. Avraham did the first step, and we are, after almost 4,000 years, continue.
Noam Arnon, thank you so much for joining me here on the Yishai Fleischer Show.
Yishai, it was really a great kef.
Fun.
Fun? That's okay. Right. To be here with you, to study Torah, and to feel the Torah, and to feel how the Torah is living. And you should come, people, you should come to Hebron to feel how Torah is alive, how the memory of the fathers and the mothers is alive, and how we hear, we get the inspiration, the understanding to feel the place that we have in our world, in our land.
All right, folks, stay tuned. We're going to have a few more minutes here on the Yishai Fleischer Show. Noam Arnon, thanks so much for being with us. God bless you.
Shalom, shalom.
All right, folks, and stay with me because there is more to come on the Yishai Fleischer Show. All right?
Martyrdom does not end something, said Indira Gandhi. It is only a beginning. And for me, each episode is a new beginning because I'm telling a story of the past set to build a present identity that's motivated to make the future of which we dream. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.com.
Folks, we're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting on the Land of Israel Network from Hebron this week without Rabbi Mike. And for the second part of the show today, it's a little bit more of Yishai monologuing. Some people told me that indeed they miss Rabbi Mike and that they think that the show is not as good without Rabbi Mike. And you know what? I totally understand them. I miss him as well. But other people encouraged me and said, yes, indeed, Yishai, it's great to hear you monologuing. And, you know, I like the sound of my own voice. So, great. Here we go. In any case, Rabbi Mike is not around, and I'm here with you. And I have a lot to say to you. But the truth is that I'm not going to be monologuing per se because I want to read some of your emails. I want to read some of your emails. Before I do, I want to thank two more people that I sometimes forget to thank. I want to make sure I thank them today. The first one is my man Moshe, Moshe H. He is behind getting the show out there to you in many platforms. And I asked him this week to get us on a new platform called Stitcher. And that's because my man Shmuel Goldman out in the Golan Heights was like, why aren't you on Stitcher? And I'm like, is that important? And he showed it to me, and I'm like, duh, got to be on Stitcher. I asked Moshe. He got us on Stitcher within a few minutes after I asked him, whatever. He took care of it fast, and it's great. It's actually a great system to sign up for the Yishai Fleischer podcast and the show, and soon, hopefully, the whole Land of Israel Network will be on Stitcher, a very important and very user-friendly podcast system, where SoundCloud is a little bit more for music, putting up your music. Stitcher is really a podcast system and allows you just to sign up for podcasts. It's just a great system, and it's like iTunes for the non-iPhone, for the Android system or whatever. So I think that's great, and so congratulations, Shechianu v'kimanu v'gianu, that now we are on Stitcher, and I'm very proud to be there. Thank you very much, Moshe. Also, thank you very much, Tabitha, who's in charge of the whole Land of Israel what's the word I'm looking for here? Promulgation. Okay. What's the word when they say it? Like a website needs to like promulgate or perpetuate or whatever. There's a P word out there. I'm sure you'll send it to me and I'll be happy if you do. Propagate. I got it. Propagation. We should be propagating. Live long and prosper. You should propagate. And Tabitha, she's behind the whole propagation of the Land of Israel Network. And so thank you very much for all the good work you do. And of course, Ben Bresky, who does not know that Ben Bresky is the best boy of this radio station. He makes it all happen. Anyways, thank you very much to those folks. Now I want to tell you, last week's show, I talked about The Problem with Christmas, right? I should have called the show The Problem with Christmas, but we called it Palestine Great again. And I don't know if it was the title of the show or the Christmas issue, but I got a ton of email about it. I wanted to read to you, and I also asked some people to – I asked people, and some people did, who would send me a hashtag that went on by myself, it's okay. So we got all that. Let me read to you some of your emails, okay? And everybody else, just listen in, because there's great folks from all over the world who are really expressing themselves amazingly. First, from South Africa, says somebody named their email handle is No Spam. They say, I'm one of the perhaps unlikely supporters of this initiative, making Hanukkah great again and pushing down on Christmas here in Israel. He says, even Christians should keep Hanukkah instead. Because in my view, it is mentioned in the New Testament, and Hanukkah is mentioned there, and therefore, I don't think Christmas is mentioned there, and therefore, Christians should keep Hanukkah. But you, my friend No Spam from South Africa, are not the only a Christian who wrote to me about the issue of Christmas. Let's see. Says to me, Elaine. Elaine writes to me. I don't know from where. She writes, Shalom Yishai, I have been listening to your show through the Land of Israel Network for several years. I was introduced to The Loin, I still get a kick out of that, gird your loin, by the good folks at Hayovel, and I've really loved listening to the podcasts. I'm a Christian, but I've been reading the Torah portions for 10 years, and I agree with you about Christmas. When I first came into Torah and learned of the pagan origins and the idolatry that is involved, I strongly wanted to remove it from my life. Interestingly, I had stopped decorating for Christmas and stopped putting up trees several years before I started Torah, so it made it easy to give that up. For many years, I wanted nothing to do with Christmas, but softened slightly this year as my children are Christians and my granddaughters are too young to understand why Grammy doesn't do Christmas. I haven't really started celebrating Hanukkah, although many of my friends do. After listening to your show, I just may start. Thank you for being such an articulate advocate for Israel. I pray you will have great success in making Hanukkah great again and removing as much of Christmas as possible from the land of Israel. I love listening to you and Rabbi Mike, and I love listening to you alone. Also love listening to you and Malka. Blessings from Elaine. Elaine, thank you so much. Thank you for your courage and your dedication to really serving God. Thank you for your email. I really appreciate it. I want to send you blessings back, not just from the land of Israel, but really from Hebron here, from the mothers and the fathers. You're a grandmother. You've raised children. Now you're raising grandchildren. And I wanted to send you the blessings of Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah to continue to raise your grandchildren in the right way and in the service of God. Thank you, Elaine. So that was two Christians. Let's see. Let's go to this one. This is from Lisa. Lisa says, just listen to your show, and I have to share with you how we celebrate Hanukkah in our small southern Mississippi country home. As you can imagine, Christmas is big down here, and quite frankly, we're tired of being last place during such an incredible time of celebration of our history. So, we had some 6-foot leftover bean sticks from the garden, and with a few screws, I created a most fabulous Star of David that I wrapped in brilliant blue twinkle lights. It cannot be ignored in my front yard. That was just the beginning. Of course, the electric menorah in the kitchen window and more Stars of David with blue lights. Our Hanukkah decorating definitely did not take last place this year. Such a great time of year to take a stand that will continue throughout our lifetime. We are light to the nations. Shabbat Shalom from Lisa. Lisa, a few things. First thing, awesome. Hashtag you're awesome. Second thing, hashtag where's the photo? Where's the photo? You got to send me a photo of that. I'll put it right on my Facebook page. Like, please, I need to see that. I want to see that for myself. That's like the stuff that gives me a will to live. So please send that over to me. I got to see that. And thirdly, I want to ask you, you're down there in southern Mississippi in a country home, and you had that ad. Did you face anti-Semitism? You know what? I think that you're going to tell me that mostly not. And I think that that's an incredible thing about, well, I'm looking forward to your answer, but still, there's something amazing about America about the American South in this case, that you can in Mississippi put out a big, 6 foot Star of David, and people drive by and are like, "Good for you." I mean, there's something beautiful about that. And of course, I'd love you to come out from your country home out in Mississippi and come join us in a country home here in the Negev Desert or something. But it's great that you were able to do such a sanctification of God's name, a Kiddush Hashem, with your brilliant blue twinkle lights. Here in Israel, I don't want to have that whole, Christmas versus Hanukkah thing. But it's cool that where you are, you can really, you can make Hanukkah big down there. That's great. Lisa, God bless you from Israel, from Hebron. I keep going because there's more of your emails. I tell you, this thing, like this last week's show got a lot of email from you guys. So let's keep that up. I want to hear more from you. But first, let's go on to an email from Beatriz. Beatriz, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Shalom Yishai, my name is Beatriz, and I just want to start by saying that I really appreciate what you and your friends at the Land of Israel Network are doing, and that it really does bring me a lot of joy and blessings in my life. I pray and hope that it'll also bring you as much simcha. I'm writing to you from Sweden, and I just listened to your podcast, Palestine Great Again? It was very encouraging, and I totally agree with you. Let's make Hanukkah great again in Sweden. It's hard to find other Jews. Listen to this. Everybody, pay attention to the next few lines, because you'll understand the life of Sweden, as opposed to what I just said about Mississippi. She writes, Beatriz writes, in Sweden, it is hard to find other Jewish brothers and sisters, especially because most people keep it secret in fear of anti-Semitism. Okay, so Elaine is putting up a 6 foot Star of David in Sweden, says Beatriz that she doesn't have an easy time finding other Jews because they're hiding. I can get a bit lonely sometimes, and I do feel like I'm very far away from home. I'm in a literally dark and cold place. But by listening to you speak from the land of our fathers and mothers, it helps me connect to the land and to my people. Even without Rabbi Mike Foyer, I still do think you managed to bring the Torah to life, and I just want to say thank you, and may Hashem bless you. I want to tell you something, Beatrice. If I can keep you company and make you feel like you're Jewish and that you're not alone in this world, like I could just go to sleep at night happy. Okay. If I came to you, if my voice and the voice of people at the Land of Israel Network or anything from Israel in general, and I want to recommend to you that you should order some products from Israel. You should have a couple. If you're going to be sitting there alone in the cold in Sweden, you should do it with a cup of wine in your hand from Judea and Samaria. Am I right? You should say L'chaim. You should look up. First thing, let me add one more thing. You're never alone, because there's always God. And he's always with us. He's always with us, especially when we reach out, when we call to him. And so many of us forget to just look up to Shemayim, to heaven, and just to say, God, please, please be with me. Oh, please let me be with you. So that's number one. Number two, the technology that allows Israel and the voice from Israel to be connected to you, and you connect to us here. That's really incredible and fabulous. But I do think that you need a bottle of wine from the Land of Israel. I don't know, there's a lot of these websites now where you can get products from Judea and Samaria. And I'll find some good, if you guys want to recommend to me what are good sites of that, and we'll talk about it on the next show. But definitely, find some. I want you to be... If you're going to be in Sweden and you're going to feel lonely, I want you to say L'chaim with a ch. And I want you to drink the same waters that Elijah the prophet drank from the Jordan River. I want you to be that connected and really spit in the face of all that darkness and instead, shine a light of Israel. And you need a cup of good Judean Samaria wine with you when you're doing that. God bless you, Beatrice, wherever you are out there, and come visit us soon. If you want me to send you some, I can't send you any warmth here from the Land of Israel, but I think the wine will do it. God bless you. David from the hills of Ephraim writes to me, we miss Rabbi Mike, but Yishai, you're great. And he adds a Hebrew phrase from the Bible, Ariye Yishag mi lo ira, if a lion roars, who shall not fear? Stay chazak, brother. And he wishes me blessings from the hills of Ephraim here in the Land of Israel. Lots of love from my brother David. All right. Awesome, man. Awesome. Great to – thank you for the great email, and I do feel strengthened by your email. But I keep going because there are more emails from you. There are more emails from you. Here's the best one. This one came into the Jewish press where the show appears, and it goes like this. I have supported Israel, but Yishai Fleischer and his narrative on fake Christmas is an insult to me as a Christian. Okay to condemn anti-Semitism, but not anti-Christianity. People like you and those that support you are what causes animosity towards the Jewish state. Thanks for opening my eyes. Hashtag Yishai, you're bad. Well, all I could say is I'm not going to even waste too much time on it. All I could say is that other Christians understood my words and did not understand them as anti-Christianity and understood what this good land needs. And so, you know, people, I'm going to go with the other folks who understood it right. Let's go on. Hashtag, this is from Isaac. Hashtag Yishai monologue best. And I mean it. Yes, I do love Rav Mike, but I need a show with just you. With just you, you're my number one show, fun and inspiring in many ways, and I feel loved by you like nobody, like nowhere else. Thanks so much. God bless you. Please pray for me and my family to have a schut to make aliyah soon. He's praying. He's asking for us to pray for him to have the merit to immigrate to the land of Israel. Isaac in Galut, Brooklyn, New York. Right. Well, Brooklyn, New York is, you know, that's a tough galut because it's really almost like Israel in so many ways. And yet, of course, it's not. That's the trickiest part of it. When you have something that's like very, very much like it, that's sometimes the most dangerous because it's very much like it, but it's really not it. Come on, everybody. Let's pray for Isaac. 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 Hashem wants you in the land of Israel. Hashem's given you every opportunity to make it to the land of Israel. This is your time. This is your time. You are born in the right time that you can make it to live here in the land of Israel. There is parnusa. There is welfare here. There's houses. There's everything. Isaac, if you want it, it is no dream. And let's do it, man. Let's be neighbors. Come out to the land of Israel, and destiny, fate, everyone all smiling upon you. Hashem is smiling upon you. This era is smiling upon you. And bring the good stuff from Brooklyn, New York. Worst comes to worst, I'll have to see you in Brooklyn. It'll be like visiting a prisoner, but okay. Can't wait to see you, Isaac. God bless you. And I mean it. If you want it, I know you want it. I can feel it. You have the schut. You have the schut. Now it's time to make it real. My good buddy Dan H. from California, who I just saw when I was out in L.A., he writes to me, hashtag Yishai alone, not alone. And he writes to me, great show, great, great show, Yishai. Thank you. Thank you, Dan. God bless you. And thank you so much for helping the Jewish community of Hebron. I appreciate your help so much, Dan, as well. Still a few more emails. Let's do three more quickly, okay? Dear Yishai, I've been listening to your show for some time, and I want to let you know how much I enjoy it. I often get to share some of your great nuggets with our friends when we read Torah each Shabbat about Christmas. You're right on. Even though I would, I like this line so much. Even though I would be considered by you a Christian, we have come to a place by good Torah teaching that we put Christmas away, actually burning our tree. Actually burning our tree, recognizing it as pagan. We hope Israel never does Christmas. We now keep the feasts instead, and each year learn more and more truth and have more and more commitment to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Keep up the good work for the Geula. Leslie from Idaho. Leslie, thank you so much for that fabulous email. And I want to tell you, I was giving a talk to Christians recently, and the pastor, and it was somewhere I had to talk about Uncle Jay, right? And I, you know, kind of was, I didn't say the name. And the pastor was like, his name is Jesus. And I looked at him and I said, brother, we have so much we agree on. Let's agree to agree. Let's agree to agree. And this is a standard line I say with Christians all the time. Let's agree to agree. We have so much that we can share. The Bible, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Exactly what you wrote, you know, coming closer to service of God through what the Torah says. Let's share that. the stuff that we have some issues with, let's not go there so much. We get it. I get it. I know what you believe. You know what I believe. It's all good. But let's talk about the things that we do share. Let's agree to agree. And when I said to him, when I said in front of this pastor, in front of his flock, I said to him, let's agree. So everybody was like, to disagree. I'm like, no, let's agree to agree. We don't have to agree to disagree. That's obvious. You don't need to agree to disagree. Let's agree to agree. Let's talk about what brings us together and what we have in common and what we love and the heritage of what you would call the Old Testament, I would call the Torah. There's so much there. Why don't we just agree to agree on that stuff and then you know, not get stuck about stuff that's really not a problem for us. It's not something that we need to haggle over. We don't need to argue over it. Let's respect each other and let's talk about the many things that we need to talk about in order to be in this great time and a great process of what God is doing. So Leslie from Idaho, thank you so much. You know what, Leslie, I want to say something. You say to me, even though I would be considered by you a Christian, and I know what you mean, I want to say to you something. You know what I consider you? A lover of the Bible, a lover of the fathers and mothers, a lover of God, a lover of truth, and a servant of God. Let's agree to agree, okay? I appreciate what you're saying, and it's good to actually highlight the differences sometimes. It's good. It's healthy. And the people that hide that, that's not always healthy. I appreciate what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. And yet I really want to tell you, I want to bless you to continue to be a servant of God. God bless you. Thank you so much, Leslie. Two more emails, and we're done. This is from my good buddy Steve, who made Aliyah. We just had Isaac, who asked us to pray that he makes Aliyah. This is Steve, and he says, Yishai, hi. As usual, your comments on this week's podcast about Christmas decorations in Israel is cutting-edge political and social commentary. As an all-American boy who chose to make home in Israel, I completely connect to your comments as an insider on both sides of the divide. Secular Israelis are easily taken in by popular culture. And since they dismiss the religious aspect of their own identity, they easily embrace the spirits of the day. I see this firsthand working in the heart of Tel Aviv every day. It's not that they disdain Judaism, as we commemorate all holidays in the office, but they resist any doctrine approach that would be an intrusion on their perceived liberty, intellectual and behavioral. They viscerally resent the ultra-Orthodox and the state rabbinate, and frankly, this colors their view of religious Judaism as a whole. I have always thought that the way to reverse this tide was to tie religious Judaism to the construct of their Jewish identity. I don't know how this can be done, but it would involve innovative education, probably using social media the way that Prager University uses it with a series of short, engaging, creative videos. If you are thinking of a task force to promote the true message of Hanukkah, perhaps this is an idea for a vehicle to spread the word. The idea should be to target the unfaithful. That's a hard word. To the unobservant. When I listen to you, I always wish you had a wider audience because your passion for Israel and Judaism is infectious. Kol HaKavod on another great show that needs wide exposure. Sincerely, your friend in Modi'in, Steve. Steve, thanks for the great email. God bless you. Haven't seen you in a long time. And even though I'm not that far away from you right now in Hebron, we haven't seen each other in a long time, and I want to really bless you for continued success and happiness and health. Thank you for your very right email. I agree with you on many points, and I think also I want to tell you that that's actually what I think about Hanukkah, that Hanukkah can win back religious feeling through other things that people are familiar with, which is nationalism, defense, an ethnic identity, and here I always get some pushback from somebody. Now, I actually believe it's very important to have an ethnic identity as a Hebrew Jew in the land of Israel, and to have that pride as that yes, we're an ethnic people. We have every right to defend ourselves, and the Maccabees had that also. The Hasmoneans, they had that also, that aspect. Look. One of the things that Israel has not done well is to sell the love of the Bible of course it has to be religious, but it can also be sold to people on a more basic more like these are our national stories, our national foundational tales, our national culture. And people have to kind of fall in love with the look and feel of the Bible. And that's been a problem. And you're absolutely right that the ultra-Orthodox, the hate towards some of the ultra-Orthodox has colored people's thinking. But that's what I want to bring back through Hanukkah. I want to bring back, you know, victory. I want to tell you, just really before I started recording the second part of the show, there were these young missile boat commanders and Navy SEALs, Israeli Navy SEALs, Shayet, and also submarine captains who were touring Hebron today. And they are just so awesome looking. So strong and awesome looking, really. Like I have a weakness for the Navy because I grew up in a Navy town, Haifa, in the Navy town, if you will. And there is a spirit of the right of the Jewish people to fight, to defend ourselves. If you tie that into Maccabees, into the whole Hanukkah thing, and you tie it in with lights. Now here's my big, this is one of my secret dreams. Okay, everybody. You pray, I'll pray for your dreams if you pray for mine. Here's one of my secret dreams. My secret dream is that we're going to do you remember when September 11th happened, and then afterwards they took these beams of light and shot them up to the sky exactly where the Twin Towers stood? That was one of the most amazing things I ever saw. It was brilliant. Forget, like, it was just so brilliant. It was just so awesome. It was so meaningful. You know, like you can never take us down. And I always remember those lights, those big projectors shining into the sky. And that's what we're going to do on Hanukkah in Jerusalem. We're going to make giant projectors on the Mount of Olives that are going to project how many nights of, how many Hanukkah candles there are. They're going to be like, it's going to be like turned on, and it'll be at the last night, it'll be 8 giant projectors with giant beams going up to the heavens. It's going to be amazing. And we got to go big. We got to make people fall in love with our story. Now, can we jump from that? Look at Christmas. One of the things about Christmas is that it's got the Grinch, and it's got this, and it's got peanuts or whatever. That's on Halloween. But like you got these, what was the Laurel and Hardy thing? Remember that? You've got these cultural iconic things in America, and I know that we're having emails here from Sweden and from other places, but like. We got to make Hanukkah like get into the bones of the kids, and then we'll build on that. We'll build on that, you know. And there's many other things. There's many other beautiful things that Israelis need to. What can I tell you? It's really, how do you get people to fall in love with their own thing, you know, with their own, as Rabbi Richman says, Cosa Nostra, you know, our own, you know, our affair. How do we get them to love our affair, our culture? How do we get them to feel like the Irish feel on Irish Pride Parade, you know, and St. Patrick's Day, like how do we get them to feel that we've got this thing that's so beautiful? And yes, I agree with you that some things have caused us to move away from that, but we gotta fix that. And I saw today as these young non-religious officers in some of the top units in the army were walking around, I could see that they could and do. Want to love Hebron, and they're there. They're there. It's not so far away from them. Steve, God bless you. And Steve, light the lights. You're the rabbi there. I know you're not a rabbi, you're going to tell me. I know you're the rabbi in that position. And that's something I want to tell all of you. Whenever you're in that kind of position where you're in a work environment, you're the rabbi. You're the rabbi. I don't care if you're a woman. I don't care who you are listening to the show. If you're in a position to teach other people, be the rabbi. Hashtag be the rabbi, you know, be the rabbi in your place, in your community, in your workspace. Share with people. And when people see that you're either a true Jew or a true lover of Israel, they'll come and ask you questions. They'll be magnetized to you. Be that person. I have been approached a thousand times in my life for just walking around. You know, remember that story that I told you about the I-24? Oh, about that news network that I told you about, that I was just standing there and girls were coming, you know, they're coming up to me and they're like, hey, we're nationalists, we're right wingers. Great stuff. All right. Last email and then one or two more points. This is from Daniel. He says, to Yishai, living in Norway, I attended an event in a town called Hamar by the local so-called Palestinian Committee. they were blathering in the same old tosh. And I asked them in Norwegian, in what way can it be called ethnic cleansing in Gaza when the population has increased? When my parents had children, we didn't say my family shrank. I'm one of the local leaders from the Med Israel for Fred, which means with Israel for peace in Norway. And we had Aviad Houdadi, a Moroccan Jewish Israeli from Radio Darom, visit us in February to tell us what is what life is like living in how life in Israel is. From the show, Christmas is a pagan festival before it became Christianized, but then so was Israel. What? But then so was Israel, as it were? Canaan. Perhaps God judged Christmas and claimed it for... Wait a second. I don't know what he's saying here. I should have read this more carefully. But in any case, he says, some say, quote, so-called Islamic State. Why not introduce a so-called Palestine? Please nudge in a so-called Palestine into your next show. Then if you haven't had time to mention the rest of my email or just disagreed outright, just throw that in and I'll know you left the fleece with the dew on it to Gideon the expression. Daniel, you're a good linguist. It's a lot of fun to read your emails. And I do like so-called Palestine. I do like that. I want to say something sad, though, Daniel, and that is where I work, there is a Palestine. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Hard thing is to say is that where I work, all around this town is a Palestine. Maybe it's not a full state, but it is a sovereign, and that's a big problem. There is a real Palestine, and the problem is I could say so-called Palestine, and that's maybe linguistically good or what. Or whatnot, but you have to know that I'm actually dealing with swaths of land that Israel gave up one for one reason or another, if it was for the cause of peace, quote unquote, or because we were just weak or afraid. The fact is, we don't have parts of Hebron; we're not allowed to go into it, and so that some parts of the land of Israel are Judenrein. Right, Gaza is Judenrein; it's been ethnically cleansed of Jews. Parts of Hebron are Judenrein. Parts of Shechem, Nablus, are Judenrein. And I have to deal with not only the media Palestine, but the real Palestine on the ground. Okay, let's go through. First thing, thank you so much, everybody, for your emails. Those are just great emails, and they made me laugh. They made me feel great. And I hope that also everybody that heard these emails understands how incredible people are out there. And they might be in Sweden or Norway or in Mississippi, and they're connecting. And that's incredible. That's really incredible, and I want to thank God for the opportunity to be able to speak with you. I want to make two more points here. First thing, I want to say the end of the year is coming. If you want to hit that donation button one more time, or you know that one time before the December 31 cutoff, that's what, you know, Christmas. That reminds you that it's time to give donations right before the fiscal new year, right? So you know, come on, everybody, season's greetings and pony up. So I'm being silly, and I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood because I was in a fight with somebody, and I made peace with them. I exercised a little bit yesterday, and I got to pray today. And you know what else I got to do? I got to clean. I took a broom, and I got to clean around Marat HaMachpelah. I do that sometimes just to make it nicer, the tombs of the fathers and mothers. Last thing I want to tell you is something political. I don't think that Netanyahu is corrupt, and I don't think that we should be trying to take down Prime Minister Netanyahu. I think that what we should be doing is praying for him and for President Trump. I think we should be praying for them to keep going with their fight against the United Nations and keep going with moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And now, by the way, there are at least 10 other countries that are discussing. That was an article in the Times of Israel. It's on my Facebook page. 10 other countries are now discussing moving they're contemplating moving their embassy to Jerusalem. We got to give them strength right now and not tear them down. And I say this not only to the left, but especially to the right here in Israel that is also now on the bandwagon of trying to tear down Netanyahu. And I think that they're wrong, wrong, wrong. Even people that I'm very close to. I tell them, you're wrong. This is the time to leave this pair that works so well together, that like each other and that listen to one another, Trump and Netanyahu. Are they perfect? Is it Mashiach? okay, you know what I mean? It's politics, and politics is dirty, and politics is compromised. But right now, there's a beautiful window and moment, and this is the time to give them strength and not to tear them down. I call this Trumpertunity. That's what I call it. And this is not because I'm a Trump supporter or not a Trump supporter. That's completely irrelevant. If you're a serious political person, you understand that politics is not about me necessarily exactly agreeing or disliking all the way or not liking all the way. Forget it. We see now that two major things have been accomplished, and that is under the recognition of Jerusalem and a fight with the UN, which is what needs to happen. And therefore, I will not support those people who try to take down Prime Minister Netanyahu, and I'm going to do it the Torah way, which I'm going to pray, and I ask everybody on the show, even if you think there's problems there, I ask you to pray for Prime Minister Netanyahu and for President Trump and for leaders like that around the world. And there are others who want to recognize the truth. So I stand with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Yes, I do. And I want to, and it's not because I necessarily think that he's everything. That's completely irrelevant. It's like not serious. It's not realpolitik. I'm into realpolitik sometimes, okay? And in this case, I believe that there's a moment and we've got to support it. That's my thought on that. By the way, the Sunni states are starting to get in a fight with Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, the so-called Palestinian Authority, right, Daniel? And that's because they're starting to see that these guys aren't going to get anywhere, and they're just going to make a mess and a muck. And right now, the real enemy is Iran. And Israel's also got to understand this. And one of the things that I would like to see in this window of time for the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, and for President Trump to realize is that it's enough talking about Iran. We've got to do something to defang these guys. And President Obama, who is a deep and true anti-Semite, and I don't care what anybody tells me, I know it in my heart, he let the reins loose. He took off the muzzle off these Iranian regime terrorists. And by the way, it's not Iran or the Iranians. If I said that, that's not what I mean. I mean, it's the regime. That regime's got to be toppled. Their teeth got to be defanged. The weapons that Hezbollah has amassed need to be destroyed. And we need to be merciless against them. Merciless we have to be against this evil, evil regime, Nazi-like regime. That's all there is to it. So I wanted to say those some political points to you on that. Again, I wanted to thank Moshe for getting us on Stitcher. So check out Stitcher. It's a great app, and it's also a great website, and the Yishai Fleischer show's on it. I hope the whole Land of Israel Network shows are going to be on it. Oh, and here's what I want to see. Because of what this is the last part of the show right now. Because of what we did in the first part of the show with Noam Arnon, and we talked about how precious Marat HaMachpelah, the Tomb of the Fathers and Mothers, is, I'm going to ask you to write me an email. The email, all it has to say is hashtag mothers or hashtag fathers or hashtag mothers and fathers. Or if you want, you could be creative and write to me hashtag founding fathers and mothers, hashtag mommy and daddy, hashtag mamas and papas. I want you to send me or hashtag the biblical family. You've got to send me an email. All you have to do, if you don't have time to write to me a full email, hashtag, I'm going to send you a link with pictures of Marat HaMachpelah. Then I want you to print whatever picture you like. And then I want to see a picture of you or your family or your living room or I don't know what, a picture with you and the Marat HaMachpelah. It doesn't even have to be you or your house or whatever it is. So you send me hashtag something that talks about moms and dads. I send you back a link that I've created of my pictures of Marat HaMachpelah that I've taken here in Hebron. And then you print that guy out and you send me a picture back with you and your life connected to Marat HaMachpelah. I want you, wherever you are, to be connected to the tombs of the fathers and mothers. That's the assignment for this week's show. And I want to bless you from here. I want to thank you very much for being with me here. And it's been a lot of fun, and it's a lot of blessings. Folks, don't forget to exercise. Don't forget to floss. Don't forget to take deep breaths. Don't forget to not get too wound up. Don't forget to take care of all the bureaucracy as early as possible, but don't let it flip you out. And of course, everything that I'm telling you is things that I'm telling myself. Don't forget to learn Torah and to love it. Don't forget to love yourself. Don't forget, and this is what I told my little girl the other day. I said to her, Leah, she was nervous about some homework assignment. I said to her, Leah, it's not a mitzvah to be nervous. It is a mitzvah to be happy and to serve God in joy. It is a mitzvah to have faith in God And it's not a mitzvah to be nervous and all worried like and all like stressed out. There's no mitzvah. Maybe that's even that's not a mitzvah. Maybe it's even a sin, a nevera. But it's certainly a mitzvah to be joyful in serving God. It's a mitzvah. Remember it. Remember, you say, Uncle Yishai said, it's a mitzvah to serve God and joy. So I have to be happy today. That's all there is to it. God bless you folks wherever you are. Thank you to the Land of Israel Network. Thank you to Chevron. Thank you to our good friends at Tchelet.com, where prizes are going to be going out soon for the first three people who wrote to me. And I'll hope to make more prizes coming out from Tchelet. That's the Blue String True Blue Jew. Good friends at JBrick sent out some presents. Tell me if you got them. I think I already got one email with a picture of somebody getting the JBrick Lego set of Shimon Bar Yochai's Lag BaOmer. That's really cool. Thank you to the good folks at Janglo, janglo.net. Janglo.net will connect you to the Land of Israel with all the information that you possibly need to make it, to make a life here. So janglo.net and all that and the society around that, connect to it. Thank you to HebronFund.org, which will give you an amazing tour in the Land of Israel. And thank you for all your great emails. God bless you. Shabbat shalom. Stay strong. Stay connected. Stay tuned. And we'll be together again. Shalom.